Nigerians from across the country are lamenting extremely high cost of living, rising petrol price amid frequent hike in tariff among the challenges making life unbearable for the people at this time. And you can know, everybody knows that anytime you talk about fuel price increase, definitely it will affect almost everything, So yesterday, Sunday, July 23rd, the federal government through the Nigerian Midstream and Downstream Petroleum Regulatory Authority, NNDPRA, announced the introduction of four additional regulations to address the environmental and safety concerns in the midstream and downstream petroleum sector, you know, saying the regulations were in line with the Petroleum Industry Act. Now, the specific regulations introduced are Midstream and Downstream Petroleum Environmental Regulation 2023, Midstream and Downstream Petroleum Safety Regulation 2023, Midstream and Downstream Decommissioning and Abandonment Regulation 2023, and Midstream and Downstream Environmental Remediation Fund Regulation 2023. All of these regulations are newly introduced. In fact, they were released by yesterday. But that is just an aside. That is just to bring you up to speed as to the latest development in that sector. Our focus this morning is on the operation of the NNPC, and that is very, very germane. And to discuss that with me on the show this morning is Obas Esedesa, Chief Correspondent and Head Energy Desk, Abuja Bureau of the Vanguard Newspaper. Obas, good morning to you, and thank you for joining me on the show this morning.
Good morning, Sheriff. I'm delighted to be here. I understand that in Lagos, you are hotter than fire.
We are hotter than fire.
I'm glad to be here.
Well done, Obas. Thank you for joining. Appreciate it. Let's start. How do we say it now? On a lighter note, what is it like covering the energy sector? What is it like? Just give me your day on the average.
I've done this for about 14 years now. It has been a huge, huge journey. You know, the energy sector, when you talk about energy sector, there are two components of it. First is the oil and gas. The second is the electricity, the power sector. Oil and gas, we know what it means for our country. It is the mainstay of our economy. It is the biggest foreign exchange earner for us. So any issue around it is hot. Then, you talk about the energy that powers our country, that powers our economy. You talk about petrol.
Right.
Petrol, whatever purchases, touches almost all of our country, all of our economy. So, in that context, you see that, you know, anything about it is hot. Nigerians are interested about the supply, about the pricing, you know, the entire value chain. Of it. Then upstream, we talk about crude, we talk about gas exports. From there, we get our dollars that we get to share back. And so it's actually an interesting bit to cover. I've enjoyed it immensely.
All right, Obas. I mean, that's essentially why you're here, because you have that knowledge of that space. But let's begin by looking at some of the operations of the NNPC. I'm sure you're familiar with these operations of the NNPC. I'm going to start with a story I came across about, you know, how they talk about the losses incurred by the NNPC. As a matter of fact, this was put out there by the Nigeria Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, NAITI. And NAITI said that Nigeria lost about 16.25 trillion to oil theft in the 12 years to 2021. They said Nigeria lost 619.7 million barrels of crude oil. This million barrels of crude oil can be valued at 16.25 trillion that I mentioned earlier. Naira, if you convert that to dollars, it will be about $46.16 billion dollars to crude oil theft between 2009 and 2020 under the watch of NNPC. Essentially, NAITI is saying that there is no crude oil theft without the knowledge maybe without the facilitation by the NNPC. You have covered this space for so long. Do you agree with the observation of Nazy?
Not completely. And I will say this. Let me explain the work Nazy does. Nazy is a part of the global process that tries to bring transparency, openness, accountability in the oil and gas industry.
Right.
So Nazy process, the EITI process, stands on principally three legs, so to speak. The government, the companies, and the civil society organizations.
Right.
Now, the companies are the operators. And 3-4 years back, NNPC became an EITI supporting country. That means we have agreed to adopt the processes that govern the EITI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, NNPC is actually has a seat on the NNPC board. So NNPC is almost part of the NNPC.
Okay.
That is on their relationship.
Okay,
so oil theft, if you check from your intro, NNPC said 2009. So that means oil theft has been with us for a very long time.
Long, long time.
Exactly. Now, because of the role oil plays in our economy, in our revenue, protecting oil assets is a national security issue. So it's not just about NNPC.
Mm.
So you heard, even under Obasanjo, you heard of JTF, the military joint task force that was sent to the Niger Delta to protect these facilities. Now, it got to the extent that more oil was stolen than were being exported. Okay? Early last year, 2021, actually, the CEO of NNPC has actually raised an alarm that, it's getting out of hand. We are losing almost close to $4 billion annually to oil thieves.
Hmm.
And early last year, the CEO of one of the IOC actually had a conversation with him.
Okay.
And he said, this goes beyond the community, no oil kind of things we see in rivers and in Delta.
Hmm.
This is an organized crime.
Hmm.
Okay? And his position was further confirmed by the chairman of Independent Petroleum Producers Group, Razak, Mr. Razak, who told us during an international conference in Abuja that we've got to, because most of the onshore assets are now being managed by local producers, Nigerian companies.
Okay.
He said it got so bad that when you pump crude from your fields, nothing comes out at the terminal.
Whoa.
So what was the reaction of the operators? They simply shut in their wells.
Hmm.
So rather than produce and lose it to peace, they stopped production. Okay, so now...
Sorry to butt in. So if we have all of this going on, especially during the point, from the point of production to the point of transporting this crude, is it appropriate to say that NNPC is unaware of some compromised pipelines? Essentially, this is why Nazy probably thinks that NNPC would be in on this at some point or the other.
No, the point I'm saying is, what is going on there is far beyond NNPC. Far beyond NNPC. Because NNPC, they don't control the police, they don't control the navy, they don't control the army, they don't control the air force, they don't control the security apparatus that ordinarily should curb this. Okay? Now, so what have they done? You have probably heard about the contract with Tonkolo's company.
Right.
$40 billion or thereabouts.
Mm.
So they decided to think outside the box, to go beyond the normal government security apparatus. So they contracted a private security company to help them police, check, monitor, survey, and safeguard the pipelines. And that is why you have seen in the past 8 months, you see production has picked up a bit. So from below 1 million barrels per day, we are up and about above it now, 1.4, 1.5. So you could see that, you know, they decided on their own to do something about it, because it was, see, you make money when you produce, but especially when the price is high. Now, Nigeria, in the past, since Ukraine, Russia invaded Ukraine, when the price of oil spiked, okay, about a year ago, over a year ago, Nigeria didn't benefit for the first time when oil hit, you know, $100. Why? Because the production was not there. So you saw that the government, the revenue, they struggled all through last year. While other oil producing countries were smiling to the bank. So it is not just an NNPC thing. That's the point I'm making.
Okay.
You know, it will take a whole lot of coordination and partnership. You read last week of the vessel that was apprehended.
I was going to come to your boss on that with the with the hiring of private security firm Tantita, and the operations of the military, we still have crude being stolen. And that leads me to my next question, Obaz, as to the monitoring of the pipelines. It's as though NNPC is overwhelmed. NNPC is helpless in terms of, I mean, look, there are technologies that we can use. I know you've been in this space way longer. Me, I'm just on the outside, but that's why you are here, to provide clarity to some of these areas. You know, NNPC should be able to monitor the operations, whatever it is that is happening along the pipelines that we have. Do you, in your coverage, do you think we have such technology?
Yes, I think we are getting there. You know, first, you know, technologies like that are, how do I put it? They are important. They take a lot to get going. There's actually a command center set up by NNPC last year.
Okay.
Yeah, last year. And that is why you are seeing some of the successes they are recording. That they were able to apprehend that vessel.
I saw from the command center of BAS that they can actually even locate, you know, where bunkering is ongoing, you know, compromised pipelines and all of those things. But the problem is to prevent those things from happening, or to catch those people while committing those crimes.
Now let's take a look at that particular vessel, for instance.
Right.
That particular vessel was captured many years ago, handed over to a particular agency, and somehow it disappeared. It registered somewhere under another flag, came back to the Niger Delta, and continued to operate for 12 years. Okay? So that speaks to the partnership I was talking about. So it should be holistic. So when the surveillance, when the camera, when the technology identifies a vessel stealing oil, okay, or transporting stolen crude, and, you know, how long does it take to get to that area? How long, what is the response time? Okay, when that particular vessel is captured, what happened to the personnel that were operating it? What happened to the vessel? But let's look at it this way. How many times have you seen a Nigerian court convict an oil chief?
Good question.
Okay.
Good question.
So it is, that is why what I was told by the IOC when he said it's an organized crime. I seem to understand what he's talking about.
Right.
Because you can't. Now, what did NNPC do? They resorted to just simply, rather than hand over the vessel, they would just burn it and destroy it. You will know that one vessel down. You see the kind of challenge they face. So they are not the judiciary. It is not their duty to prosecute.
Right.
It is not their duty to keep hold of vessels involved in stolen crude. Those are the jobs of other security agencies.
Essentially, Obaz, I mean, I like the question you asked about what are they doing. Essentially, you're implying that this goes beyond NNPC. In fact, we could say that even the security agencies are in this syndicated crime of
exactly.
Okay, Obaz, you know what we're going to do? Let's prepare to head out. Let's take this break. We'll take this break. When we return, I want us to talk about fuel subsidy, because there's also an allegation that, you know, NNPC is not really, you know, upfront about the subsidy payment thingy. We'll be back, Lagos. Stay with us, please.
This is Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
The nation's number one radio station, 99.3 Nigeria Info, Lagos. Thank you for being with us. We're back from the break. I'm Sheriff Quadri. I have Obaz Esedesa on the show. Obaz is the chief correspondent and head energy desk, Abuja Bureau of the Vanguard newspaper. He joined us this morning on the show. Obaz, thank you again for finding time to join us on the show this morning. Obaz, are you with me? Well, Obaz is not here. We'll try and reach out back to Obaz, then we can have him back on the show, because I still have loads of questions to put through Obaz this morning. Let's see if we can get him back on the line this morning. In the meantime, please send me your thoughts on your questions on WhatsApp. WhatsApp is 0809-597-5805. On WhatsApp, please make it short and straight to the point if you're sending me those messages. Obaz, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Let's move on ahead very quickly, Obaz, this morning. And our next angle to look at is the area of subsidy payment. And quite a number of people have spoken in this regard as well. One of such people are the lawmakers themselves at the National Assembly. Some federal lawmakers, especially those on the Night Assembly, during many of their debates on subsidy regime, they alleged that subsidy payment was 3.7 trillion from January to June 2023, and that in 2011, Nigeria scandalously incurred 2.53 trillion back in 2011, the whole year, 2.5 trillion on subsidies for real and fictitious products, according to the lawmakers. Now, look at what the former NNPC, you know, did in terms of subsidy payments. Would you say that there were no frauds being perpetrated by NNPC themselves at that time, Obaz?
Okay, so let's do it this way. Two ways. We'll first of all go back to 2011.
Okay.
And now we'll link it to what is actually happening now.
Okay.
So in 2011, I'm not sure about the figures you mentioned.
Right.
But I'm going to use Nati's audit reports. Nati's audit reports, you know, 2011. You know, shows that subsidy payment for 2011 was 1.9 trillion naira. Now, I'm going to go back a year to situate that 2011 figure. Now, in 2010, according to NATO, the subsidy payment was 416 billion. Okay? Now, in 2012,
okay,
the figure was 960. So the question was, what happened in 2011?
In 2011.
Yes. Now, as at that time, the government was paying subsidies directly to the marketers.
Okay.
And as at that time, the agency in charge was Petroleum Product Pricing Regulatory Agency, PPPRA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were the one in charge of issuing licenses to marketers to bring in petrol.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was the year of President Jonathan and Desiani Alice Madueke. Now, the only thing a marketer needed or an individual needed to become a petrol importer was to know somebody in government. So all manners of people were bringing in products. So it wasn't just NNPC.
Okay.
You understand?
Okay.
Now, government, PPRA will authenticate your license, will monitor your imports, and PPRA will pay. So it had absolutely nothing to do with NNPC as a sole supplier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast forward to 2-3 years back during Buhari's year. Now, subsidy is the price of petrol is determined basically by two components. First, the price of crude oil in the international market.
Okay.
Secondly, the foreign exchange, the exchange rate of the naira to the dollar.
Mm.
Now, you will understand that in Nigeria, yes, naira not depreciates. It keeps falling. So each time the naira loses value, the difference in subsidy in the actual price of petrol and what we pay increases. So it keeps widening. It keeps widening. So now you come because of the several forex windows created by that past government. It was not difficult because NNPC is in charge of Nigeria's dollar. It has favorable dollar exchange. Because of that, the other marketers were unable to get cheap dollar to bring in products.
Mm.
So government did something drastic.
Okay.
They made NNPC the supplier of last resort. Now, what does that mean? It means it became the responsibility of NNPC to ensure that the country had petrol, whether others import or not.
Okay.
So that made NNPC the sole importer of petrol. Now, something else happened. Rather than government paying NNPC, you know, make budgetary allocation, then pay NNPC for subsidy, they asked NNPC to use their own money to pay for the petrol.
Mm.
Now, so what happened? There would not be a letter. Now, NNPC is in charge of Nigeria's crude.
Okay.
So, ordinarily, they ought to sell those crude and remit to the Federation account. Now, but because they were paying from their cash flow for petrol we were consuming, they will net it off from the Federation money with them. Mm. At times, there will be a little bit of surplus to remit.
Okay.
At times, the Federation will owe NNPC because we were not producing enough crude. There was no enough sales to net off the amount paid for subsidy.
Mm.
So it kept rising. It kept rising. To the point that when I'll show you something. No, let me tell you something. I'll draw you back to 2016.
Okay.
In 2016, the subsidy for the entire year was 99 billion, according to Nature.
Okay.
Why was it 99? In 2016, the price of crude as of January 2016 was below $30 per barrel. Then Dr. Ibe Kanchiku was the Minister of State. So they started this price modulation fee. They were principally for about 3-4 months, there was no subsidy payment at all because the price of crude was down.
Okay.
And we were paying almost equivalent of the market price.
Mm-hmm.
So the price was down. You know, what this government did with subsidy removal, it's very painful for everyone.
Mm.
It's very painful. But what they have done is to take away the corruption in and around subsidy payments.
Mm. Mm.
To take away the smuggling of petroleum products to other countries. NNPC doesn't control the borders. it is not, they don't have what it takes to control the borders.
Mm.
They import and they distribute to marketers.
Right.
Marketers take it outside the country.
Right.
So we now have people in Niger, in Cameroon, in the Republic of Benin, in Chad, being supplied by Nigeria under a subsidy regime. And that is why it ballooned to the level we have it now.
Mm. Abbas, we have Abbas. I'm really sorry. We have to leave it here because we are pressed for time. But I would look for time to bring you back here because I still want to ask you about one of the allegations I've heard that NNPC directly or indirectly may be responsible for why the refineries are the way they are, so that they can keep importing and then keep operating and then be relevant in the scheme of things as of today. But we'll get to that point when next I bring you here. But thank you so much, Abbas, for coming on the show today. You've provided so much clarity on the operation of NNPC for today.
Thank you, Sherry. I love your show. I'm going to monitor you now and follow you every Monday.
Thank you, Abbas, for joining us. Abbas is a chief correspondent and head energy desk, Abuja Bureau of the Vanguard newspaper, been covering the energy sector for about 14 years.
Nigeria Info.
The nation's number one radio station, 99.3, Nigeria Info. We're broadcasting live from Etimi and christened here, Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria. Lagos, welcome to the last 1 hour of the Morning Crossfire Extended this Monday morning. Again, sincere apologies. We're not streaming live on Facebook and on YouTube as we normally do. Well, hold up. Let me confirm that again. Oh, yes, we'll be live right now. As a matter of fact, we are live right now on Facebook and on YouTube. Great stuff. I had already put up my own setup. So I'm going to remove my own setup now. So you can go and watch live on Facebook and on YouTube. Nigeria Info 99.3 is how you can watch on our official Facebook and our official YouTube channels. Okay? All righty. Now, as discussed, as informed you earlier, we'll be talking about Labour Party politics on the last 1 hour of the show this morning. And I have sitting down here with me Dr. Eunice Atanko, the Chief Spokesperson of the Labour Party. Dr. Tanko, good morning to you.
Thank you very much for having me. Good morning, Nigerians.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's nice. Nice, isn't it?
This is your first time in our studio?
Yeah, that's in Lagos.
In Lagos.
Studio, but I've been to Abuja studio, I've been to Kano studio, so I've been around.
Fantastic.
I think I've been part of the pioneers of some of the interviews that was granted in Abuja.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Femi D, my colleague, speaks so much about you. I think you've been on his show severally as well.
That's right.
He hosts a morning show there.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's begin. Let's talk very frankly. Please go straight to the mic. Move closer to the mic.
Okay.
Let's begin. Who is your party's national chairman?
Barrister Julius Aburi. No contradiction.
No contradiction whatsoever.
At all. Except the day in which he resigned and handed over party. But at the moment, he is the national chairman of the Labour Party.
Hmm. Who is Lamidi Apapa?
Okay, and this is the story. Lamidi Apapa is one of the deputy or vice chairman of the party.
Okay.
At a point in time. And then, truth be told, Lamidi Apapa has been part of the party, and then we've been together. But then, all of a sudden, I think something must have bitten him from somewhere. And then he decided to act the way he is acting. Because most of us are labor and unionist, including my humble self.
Okay.
So we have a discipline. No matter what our challenges are, we deal with it internally, and then we come out together. So when somebody among the group decides to betray this particular strong union, he becomes a non-personal grantor. So in this case, whatever it is that Lamidi Apapa had or accused Aburi of, nobody knew about it, except, of course, when we just heard it on the public. And so, therefore, as far as we are concerned, this particular issue has been challenged in the court of law, and then collectively, even as the labor movement, the labor congress, and then the TUC, including the party apparatus itself, recognize only one party chairman, and that is Julius, Barrister Julius Aburi, and his national secretary, Malam Ibrahim Umar, and then the National Working Committee.
Hmm. Let me talk to you then about the recent judgment in Imo, Kogi, about elections conducted by Aburi, the notification of that process. What's the party's position on that?
Well, interestingly, I was part of the team that went to do the primaries of the delegates of the Imo state. And then we had a primary, and then at the primary, a governorship candidate emerged in the name of Achonu, who emerged as candidate. You see, if people who are interested in building a front, this is a struggle for over 30-something years that we've been in the trenches. We've never had it good, as close as this. For us to have a party chairman under the leadership of Barrister Aburi, we have 8 senators. We have 38 federal House of Reps. We have 64 state assembly members elected under this leadership. What more could anybody have wanted from a gentleman as Aburi? Yes, you can. Every leadership has its own challenges.
What is the position of the party as regards that primary election?
No, the party thing is very clear. I just mentioned it, that we have a primary and then the person emerge under that particular leadership. So even if there are other people who are saying that they had a primary somewhere and they are having it, as far as it did not come through the properly leadership, it is not recognized because INEC was at that particular primary. And then this particular gentleman emerged as the governorship candidate of the party.
Did the law court nullify that primary or not?
I don't know whether they are very much aware of how the processes are, because that particular case was taken to court by another candidate from another group of people named by Bashir. So it does not even concern any one of us. Probably what the judgment were, because I know there are some kind of a misinterpretation of those particular decisions.
That's why I'm asking you now, because I want you to provide clarity on that.
There were misinterpretations as regard to what took place and probably who appealed or not. It has nothing to do with the constitutionally elected leadership of the party and then the person that came in as candidate.
So what is it about then, if it's got nothing to do with the leadership of the party?
Well, with all due respect to our judiciary, I think probably the court has been misled.
Okay.
And until when clarity is being given to this particular court, and I think the court may have to retract its own step, because they are fully misled. Because you see, in court, court only deal with what is being brought in front of each.
True that.
So if they don't have any fact as regards to, they will also act on what they see and then probably believe. But in this case, I will also wish and pray that some of our court cases do a little bit of investigative journalism as regards to true position of whatever is being brought into the
before
front
before them.
Before them, so that they can adjudicate on the right situation on ground. Because honestly, that case should have been thrown out of the court even before it even landed on the front of the judge.
Let's quickly, because I had to bring that in, because when I saw this story, I wasn't really clear as to, you know, what happened, who took the case to court and all of that. So I said, look, when you get here this morning, I'm going to just ask you that question.
This is the true position of the situation. And far as we are concerned, none of this particular individual that was being pronounced or didn't even go to the primary that we conducted. They were not there at the first place at all. They were not even they were not there. That's just the truth.
Is there a reconciliation move in the Labour Party right now?
Oh, sure. And it may interest you to know, there was a melodrama that happened at the presidential appeal petition court, if you remember, when Lamidi Apapa appeared.
That's right.
Prior to that, I was part of a mediating team that had a meeting with a group of individuals led by our very amiable and elegant colleague and leader, Aziz Balami, and quite my humble self and quite a lot of people. We tried to mediate to have a meeting. In fact, we had a meeting with Rabambi and the rest of them that, look, gentlemen, this is our house. We are building it. If there are issues, let's deal with it internally. Everybody has an issue one way or the other. That's how democracy is being built. So let us tarry a bit. Nobody should come up and present anything. But they went against that particular mediation that took place and then presented themselves, and then the rest.
Were they all there, all of them?
At the meeting?
Yes.
Yeah, except for Mr. Apapa.
Okay.
They were there. They were there. Arabambi was there. All of them, those who are raising this particular issue, were there.
Right.
And then, you know, interestingly also, the chairman of the party, Barrister Julius Aburi, also set up a team of very erudite leaders, led by Mr. Ibadin, former IG, and then there were police officers, there were army officers who have been expert in reconciliation. In fact, they had meetings with every one of them, including Anselm, Arabambi, and all of those ones, for reconciliation. And then it may also interest you to know, that particular meeting that took place, there was an agreement that our presidential candidate agreed to now meet with them,
okay,
to really hear their grievances and deal with it internally. Then they went again and do that particular melodrama that you saw at the Court of Appeal. Here also, I would like to mention the president of the Nigerian Labour Congress,
Joe Ajaero.
Joe Ajaero has also made, you know, agree in a kind of principally that yes, okay, if these people believe that they are unionist and they are in the interest of what the collective interests were,
right,
they should bring their case up. We are the father and mother of this political party. The certificate of the Labour Party is in the hands of the Nigerian Labour Congress. For those who do not know, everybody that is a worker in Nigeria is a member by proxy. If you have not taken the card of the Labour Party, you should, because it belongs to you. And then the Labour Congress also said that, okay, why don't you tell us what your problems are, and then we will deal with it. Because we, as a disciplined association, we have a way of dealing with our matters, no matter what it is. Nobody is above any, adjudication or dealing within the apparatus of the labor movement. Nobody is above it.
Essentially, Dr. Tanko, you're saying that Labour Party belongs or are members of Labour, NLC, are members of Labour Party.
Of course.
Essentially.
Yes, because even if you do not know, members of the leaders of the Nigerian Labour Congress and the TUC are members of the executive of the Labour Party. I give you an example. Comrade Olorunfemi is a vice chairman of the Labour Party. He is of the TUC. Okay. Miss Ladi is of the NLC. She's also a vice to Abure. And then she also is the Nigerian Labour Congress. So anybody who do not know, because we need orientation. A lot of Nigerians don't know this. If you are a member of ASU, if you are a member of Pengasin, if you are a member, any membership of this trade union, the Labour Party is your party.
Whether they are card-carrying members or not.
It's your party because you own it. So, and they don't know. And then if they have already known this ab initio, most of the challenges that we have faced in terms of people going to vote and knowing fully well that this is not about tribe, it's about class. Look, Nigeria is divided into two. It's either you are extremely rich, stole Nigerian money to a point of stupor, and you are extremely rich, within you cannot count what you have stolen, or you are a poor person, extremely poor to the point in which you cannot even account for what you are going to eat in the next minute. There's no middle class. And then if you want to emancipate yourself from this shackle of poverty, you must work with this particular Labour Party so that you can build a middle class, so that you can have a working class people that can help this country.
Is Peter Obi a member of the Labour Party?
Oh, sure he is. Because so
I want to read something to you, Dr. Yunusa, or what Arabambi said. Arabambi says, it's indeed worrisome, I'm quoting now.
Yes.
It's indeed worrisome that even though he went to the Presidential Electoral Tribunal as a non-member of the Labour Party and lied severally that there was a time they issued subpoena to INEC for all these documents and maintained that they were unable to pay all the documents they seek to tender, kicks regret in our party stakeholders. Essentially, Aaron Babi is saying that Obi went to the tribunal as a non-member.
It's unfortunate that people try to mislead the country and make blatant lies. And the question I really want to ask, where was he when Labour Party was, and when Peter Obi was not a member of the Labour Party? Is it not the euphoria of the Peter Obi that you are making, that you're making him more even known in this particular country? So he should be grateful to Peter Obi for being a member of the Labour Party. I was a member of the electoral committee that that conducted the primary of Peter Obi in Asaba. And if he was not a member of the Labour Party, I would never have ever been, because I have a name to protect. I have a track record to protect. I would never have been any member of that particular. So he joined the party. And I have on record his membership card. And I saw his membership card. I was a star witness at the tribunal. So why would somebody come and tell me that Peter... In fact, Peter Obi is more a Labour Party member than even Arabanbi himself, because he believes in the interests of the Nigerian people and is targeting to get Nigerians out of the wood. If Arabanbi believe in this particular cause, he shouldn't have been the one that will be championing anything against the Labour Party. You cannot attempt to destroy the house in which that fed you. That would be blasphemy. In fact, it's treasonable. Because that is where you were known. That was where you believed that you can help the Nigerian people. But you are now trying to bring it down, shamefully too. It's sad. I don't like to join issue with people. But right. Collectively, I believe that all of us have been in the trenches for a very long time. And if you really want to get Nigeria out of the wood, if there's somebody who's already championing that cause, all you needed to do is strengthen him to get us out of the wood. Somebody was just asking me, I was a presidential candidate in 2019. Why am I a spokesperson? Because I believe there's somebody who can give us something different. I am from Kano State. I am a Hausa man. I could have easily have said, no, it has to be me. The way they colorize us as Hausa people who always want to be, want to be. But I felt, look, there's a time in which something had to let go. We have been opportunity to lead this country. What has it done for our people? Our people cannot go to their farms. Most of our children are out of schools. We cannot even feed 3 square meals. We have vast land we are not transforming into a productive use. And then we've led this country for that particular reason. So if you cannot do it, let's give somebody who have that particular idea of transforming it so that we can benefit from it. Then if we benefit from it, then you can come back and say, yes, it's time for us to also lead because I have something to give. It's not about individual. It's not about tribe or religion. No, I felt at a point in time it was going to be a reconciliation attempt. But then we have somebody who has competent character, capacity, and compassion that can take this country out of the woods. So why don't you support him? If you believe in this country, it's not about your tribe. Fight for Nigeria. Let's fight for this country, for crying out loud. And I am happy, and I thank God for all of these people who have supported us this far, because they supported us with their might, the determination that they've shown. They put in their money. They put in their... In fact, to a point in time in which I was in Zaria just 3 days ago, and then I saw somebody with the wristband in which I'm having on my hand. I was like, you are still having the wristband? She said, yes, because we still believe. We still believe and we're still hopeful. Look, it's not... If Nigeria is good today and we are everywhere, you can easily pick a train from Kano to Lagos without feeling anything. In 2 hours, it can be done. You're happy about it. You can go from Kaduna to Maiduguri or from Calabar to Sokoto without you being afraid that you need to change the color of your dress. You cannot dress like an Ibibio man, or you cannot dress like a Hausa man coming to Calabar. You are not afraid. Is it not better for all of us? How can we as a people continue to stand where we are as of today, and somewhere like Rwanda is telling that Rwanda is taking the shine out of Nigeria? It's completely absurd. It's completely, and in here today we are, and I keep on saying, our problem, we all understand that we have bad leaders. We don't have even thinkers as leaders. Because how can you correlate that if a National Assembly is taking about 700 and something million naira?
I'm coming to that.
So don't mind me. Sometimes when we're talking about Nigeria, we talk about it so passionately because we believe and we know that Nigeria can be better.
Before we move away from your party politics, because we'll delve into another matter now, you have said that reconciliation is ongoing, or it started. Has it stopped?
No, it hasn't. Because the same group have interviewed a lot of people, and in fact, they've made a lot of attempts to reach out to each and every one that has issues, and so that we can deal with it internally and take a frontal position collectively. And that is ongoing.
Is there, if reconciliation breaks down, like irreparably, you know, breaking down of things, is there an option of expelling Lamidi Apapa, Arabanbi, and his faction?
It's already
from the party?
Under that particular, he's been suspended.
Expulsion. Is that on the table?
Well, that will be the work of the committee that has already been put in place to do. And then if they found him wanting in that, of course, they would take the... The party has a constitution, and the processes of the constitution of the party must be followed.
But then the matter is still in court, so we can't say exactly which of the factions is a valid...
There is no faction as far as we are concerned.
As far as Nigeria is concerned, we're seeing two factions.
Normally, people, when somebody come to claim, a faction appears when there is institutionalized. Okay, in this case, people can come and claim. Let me give you an example of the scenario.
Okay.
While we are in the office, people will now come and then they said they organized, they had a meeting, National Working Committee meeting, without forming a quorum. Break into the office and then take over leadership. What is that? That is coup d'etat. In fact, such persons should have been arrested for making such attempt because there was no legal means being done, because we have unproved that the office were broken into.
By who now?
By the same people that are just by Lamidi Apapa and his court. They broke into the office. Your own office, you do need to break into your own house? If you are legitimate, must you break into your house? You can't. You can only go into that particular house. There is a way in which you... Look, a meeting, if you have found the chairman wanting in a certain way, call for the meeting. The constitutional provisions are there. How do we call for a meeting? How do we discuss this? It is at that point in which, when you are in a meeting, when there is a disagreement, then you can take up the... There are always a mechanism of how to take over leadership. You don't take over leadership through the back door. It's not possible. And we saw what happened to those who attempted. It's a treasonable offense.
Dr. Tanko, let's take a break. We're going to head out right now. Time moves so quickly on this show. No doubt about it. When we return, I want to talk to you about your members in the National Assembly and this proposition that money's about to... you know, be increased for lawmakers. Yes. What's the party's position for your members? Are they taking it or are they in solidarity with the people? Because majority of the people are the opinion that National Assembly needs to tune down their expenses. Well, let's go to break. Lagos will be right back. Stay with us.
We keep you informed all day long with the best radio programming. Nigeria Info.
Welcome back to the Crossfire. This Monday morning is the Morning Crossfire Extended here, and we're live from our studios on Etimi and Christian Victoria Island. I'm Sherif Quadri. Dr. Eunice Atanko, the chief spokesperson for the Labour Party, is right here in the studio with me, and we've been having conversation on party politics. But let's expand the conversation. Dr. Atanko, thank you again for coming through.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, let's talk about... I'm sure you're following trend at the national level. We hear that the Nigerian lawmakers have about 70 billion out of the 500 billion approved for the president. Quite a number of Nigerians are saying, look, if truly indeed the lawmakers are for the people, none of them should take from this money. They should be speaking up against this money. As a matter of fact, what's the position of the Labour Party and maybe the directive from the party to your representatives?
Well, the party position is always a pro-people's decision. It's always in the interest of the people. And so, consultative meetings have already been going on as regard to what would be the formal position of the party being there. But if you ask me personally, it would have been my own wish that every of our lawmakers, irrespective of the partisan position, and say, look, every money that has been approved should go to the Nigerian people. Yes, I know that a lot of them must have gone through a lot of expenses through, so there is an opportunity for them to maybe recoup from the expenses. But right. there are major opportunities ahead of them. Because it's only when the people survive that they will survive. If the people are not surviving, it becomes... Let's take a look at it from a different direction. A lot of people don't understand this. When you make the people comfortable, it eases off the tension on you. Yes, because every lawmaker goes back to this constituency. Somebody from somewhere, if his child did not go to school, he's thinking about his lawmaker. If he doesn't eat 3 square meals, he's thinking about his lawmaker. If there are health situation, security situation, he's always thinking about his lawmaker. How many people would you take from that money that you'll be giving to every day? But if you make him independent, and then, allow him to survive on his whatever business that he or she is doing, he will be off your neck. And we will reduce the issue of social vices. We will make the people a little bit more comfortable. And they will be more responsive to you. You will not have many people knocking at your door. In fact, our judiciary will have less work to do. They'll be thinking about how to make the society more stronger. So let's look at it in that direction. For me, it could have been like, okay, we donate all of that is approved to the Nigerian people. Let's find a way. It may not be even be sharing the money, just like the way they are thinking about giving everybody an insultive amount of money, call it 8,000 naira. That's very, very insulting. Some will even say that, okay, in the local government, it may be big money and all. But how much can 8,000 naira take you? Right here and now, you are moving from point A to point A. Uber will take you 8,000 naira from here to the airport. Mm. And it's done.
Maybe more. Maybe more.
So you cannot even understand. Mm. So it's very, very important. But if you drive this money into another area in which that can be more productive to the people, you could earn more than 8,000 naira. So those are the areas in which we can be, you know, to divert our attention. And then the Nigerian people will hail the National Assembly. If the National Assembly could even just say, okay, for once in our life, we're donating everything that has been approved, let's find a way of making Nigerians comfortable. At least you are comfortable. Can you compare a National Assembly member with an ordinary citizen on the streets? It cannot be possible.
Let me talk to you about the policies of Tinubu's government. In the last few weeks that's been in charge, what are your thoughts on those policies?
I think that even though I wouldn't have made any statement as in the government, because I'm challenging that particular position already in the court of law. And I will make a very just open statement and say, look, you are in a rush to improve, to impress people. You are in a rush to consolidate and institutionalize and legalize your position, so you make mistakes. That is the situation.
Hmm. You think he's made mistakes?
Yes, there are mistakes. There are mistakes because they may look good. All of us have agreed that we can remove subsidy and all of those things. But right. When you make those particular statements and then without thinking before even acting, it leaves you more problem. As it is now, they are struggling with how to, you know, find a way out of the issue of this particular fuel
subsidy removal.
And then even though you are not also at the same time, it has dwelled into even announcing your cabinet, one would have thought that probably you are trying to say, oh, you are hitting the ground running and all solutions have been provided. Nigerians want to feel the impact of governance that affects them directly. But they are now under pain and pang.
You think he shouldn't have removed the subsidy?
No, he didn't remove the subsidy. It was already been removed by Muhammadu Buhari. Okay. All he need to do was find it would have been a cushioning effect announcement that would have drawn the people nearer, not announcing it and putting pain and pang on them. That is where the mistake
would
go.
What would your principal have done any differently?
Our principal will have talked about the issue of modular refineries in all the 6 geographical zones.
Okay.
The modular refinery will have been up and running producing fuel so that it can reduce the pain of importing fuel into the country. And then we'll put it together and just position it to make sure that, okay, while we are importing the minimal one, gradually we are reducing and then we are producing at home. That is possibly done. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about how the earnings of the civil servants will be, which is, of course, weekly or monthly, just like as we've already postulated earlier on, so that we'll put that in the front burner and the Nigerian people will know that they are going to earn better. And then the cost of transportation will have been reduced in such a way that it will affect the goods and productivity that we consume every day. In those particular statements will make you so that you are pro people.
All of this will take some time.
Like I said, with a national assembly, you can easily deal with it because it's about the people. Because any political party that goes against the interest of the people will be thinking about his own constituency and how we are going to vote him back into position of power. If he goes against the interest of the people, you know that you are losing your seat. So it's about Nigeria. And here that is very, very important. There are issues that have to do with the Nigerian people that you cannot play with. If you are playing party politics, it has different connotation. But when you talk about the survival, the security of the people, the economy of the people, you talk about the education, you talk about the livelihood, all of these things are contained in Chapter 2 of the Constitution of Federal Republic of Nigeria, which every politician who wants to be in a position of power swear to protect. So if you swear to protect that, you must act in that consonant. Because we are talking about people cannot eat 3 square meals daily. They cannot be sure of their transportation of their children from point A to point B. They are not so sure how they are secured moving from one point A to point B.
Mm.
They are not even, the way in which they are being looked, I mean, how can you just imagine in a country like Nigeria? And then somebody told me, this is just by the way, and then they say they stole the lightning at the airport. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yes.
It's unbelievable. So these are the things that we need to... What must have pushed the people today to get to this extreme level? What about if there's a plane crash? A lot of people will die. You don't even care? So these are things that cannot be joked with.
Hmm.
So collectively, we will agree. And I know, Peter Obi, when he was the governor of Anambra, is in the assembly, most of them are opposition, but he proved beyond reasonable doubt that he can move in people's policies that can be acceptable by all political parties that are involved.
Indeed.
Yes.
Dr. Sanko, let's take a few calls as we prepare to go. 0700-993-993-993 and 01465-7190 our telephone line. Second line, I just called now, is for female callers and female callers only. And please, when you call, go straight to the point so we can get your thoughts in. We have a very limited time left on the show. Thank you for understanding. Nigeria Info, good morning to you. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, please be audible. We're struggling to hear you.
Sorry, I'm Mr. Boniface.
You are who?
Mr. Boniface, Boniface.
Mr. Boniface, please go on.
Yes. It's what is this party, the present government presidency.
Mr. Boniface, we're really struggling to hear you.
No, okay. I said, with this selling of 8,000 naira per... household of 12 million. It's just a financial problem. But there are people more problems. And why people more has...
Thank you for your thought. Thank you, but that's really not what we're talking about. Good morning to you.
Good morning. This is Ugo.
Welcome, Ugo. Welcome.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Dr. Tanko, I want to appreciate your time. Also, I want to ask this question. What is your disposition concerning the case that is coming up?
What case is coming up? What case?
The tribunal.
We can't preempt the tribunal to be prejudicial, right? But thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Good morning to you. We lost our call, so we're going to hang up on that. Let's take another call. Good morning to you.
Hello, good morning, sir.
Morning to you.
My name is Victor. As you invite this man for a studio like this, make you invite Tinubu like that.
Let's take another call. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Mr.
Good morning to you.
Yes, and appreciate your program.
Please go on. Go on. Let's hear you.
Thank Mr. Dr. Tanko. And I want ask, please, how far about the tribunal case? Is there any, because I'm a Labour Party, are we having any hope for positive change?
Dr. Yunita cannot speak on whether you're having hope or not, and that's because he's not a member of the judges there, and we're not allowed to preempt the outcome of the tribunal. So we're not going to be, if you notice, you see that I've not asked him anything about the tribunal because it'll be prejudicial to be going in that direction. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, please, morning to you.
Yeah, this is Michael from...
Michael, you're calling the female line, so I'm going to hang up very quickly. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning.
Please, your guest, as always, please let him tell Ajiro. We don't want any reaction once they put money on fuel. We should start reacting with this money, humongous money that they are taking from that boat houses. Do you understand?
Okay.
Since they are party members... And they represent Labour. How can they be there? The money is being squandered and they're just waiting for when they put add money to fuel. It's very wrong. Do you understand?
Yes, I'm with you.
So they should stop, whatever we have to do, even if it's mean one day, sit at home or call us, like off work, to make sure that they do what we're asking them. And they're all hoping to be a governor or house member. That's why they're not talking on that money. If it's not, then they should be talking. If we save money from that, from governance, you know what it means. And then those that are doing copy and paste. Now he has mentioned modular refineries. Maybe they should just start it. Good morning.
Good morning to you too. Thank you for calling me. Appreciate it. Dr. Tanko, I'm just going to ask you one final question. We're not going to go into the PEPT proceedings and everything. I just want to ask a straightforward question. Do you have confidence in the PEPTs?
We have hope. We have hope and we believe that God...
Not confidence.
We have hope. Let me repeat that. We have hope. Because if I say confidence, you mean probably I know the outcome of the judiciary that will come. No, but we have hope that there will be courage that will be instilled into the minds of our judges so that to help put Nigeria on the right path. The processes are wrong and everybody knows this.
The electoral processes?
The processes are wrong. Okay. Everybody knows this. You don't need to be told. It's very vivid. Because when you have an election, three elections took place on the same day. Two elections were announced on the real time. One was not announced at the real time. And nobody can give you an explanation. You keep on dilly-dallying from... You know there's something wrong. If the processes are correct and done very rightly, everybody will have congratulated the leader, the winner. We will congratulate the leader and thank him, and thank the electoral umpire for doing a nice job. There are places in which elections were being done rightly. All of us come in and congratulated them. Didn't we? We did do in Edo. We did do in Ondo. We saw this. I was an electoral observer, and I saw the plainness and you know the way we used to have. We have soldiers who usually then give you election results, even doing. But there was no room for that during those particular elections. The election results were being produced at the real time, and everybody like you are in polling unit, you saw that it was 10 people who killed. And through CEO, it's the 10 results that they are giving me, and it's correct. So everybody had hope, and that actually culminated into having that particular large number of Nigerian youth registering, 12.5 million of them coming out to register that they want to vote. And many Nigerians who were jackpotting out of the country were jackpotting into the country to vote. You can see. So the hope and the trust was already being built by INEC. How I wish they consolidated on it.
Dr. Tanko Yunisa, we'll stop it here for this morning. Thank you so much for joining me on the Morning Crossfire.
Thank you very much, and God bless the Federal Republic of Nigeria.
That's our show this morning, Lagos. Thank you for being a part of it. You can watch this show again on Facebook and on YouTube. Just type in Nigeria Info 99.3. You can watch from the start to the finish line. I'm Sharif Quadri. I'll be on the radio tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. But for now, I'm stepping aside so that WhatsApp Lagos crew can come on. They don't do anything serious. Just lay back, have fun. It's Monday. Don't take things seriously. And please take it easy out there. Try and help as many people as you can, especially those closest to you, because times are really hard this time. All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye for now.